Welcome to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and I am so encouraged about joining you today to encourage you, and joining me to do that, of course, is my co-host on the VFN Radio program is Pat Hamilton.
Good morning.
Also joining me from the city streets of New York on the outskirts, about 15 minutes out, is the one, the only bearded man, John Ramos.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. Give a shout out this morning to Eddie. I am so excited about hearing how your insanity program is going, man. I'm sure you're down to an 18-inch waist now. I'm going to get brave enough next week, man. I'm going to weigh next week and see how this thing's going. Give a shout out also to all of our listeners out there. We're so grateful for all the ones joining the VFN Virtual Stadium. Kenneth Powell, welcome to VFN Radio Audience. And Richard and Gene and Alvin, thank you so much for joining the Virtual Stadium. Give you a shout out this morning to Vivian. Vivian, we're praying for you, ma'am. Ma'am, for a quick healing. And thank you, Tiny, for letting us know. Give a shout out to all the Navy Federal Credit Union employees that are listening to VFN Radio. Be encouraged. I know you're being monitored, but realize God is with you and He'll give you grace. Good morning, Denver! On the frontier for God. Give a shout out this morning to Crystal in the Bronx. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Give a shout out to Peter this morning, man. We're loving the I Abide shirts. We are loving them, loving them. You are listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me this morning to encourage you is John Ramos.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. And also joining me is Pat Hamilton.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. So here we are. Here we are. Man, it is. Oh, my goodness. It's like, what, Tuesday?
Yeah.
Tuesday morning? Is it Tuesday morning? Is that it? Oh, my goodness. We're watching the producer of the program. His hair is falling out of it for some reason. There we go. Oh, my goodness. He's getting a little bit older now.
He's getting older.
He's getting a little bit older. I mean, it's the producer.
Amazing how that keeps happening.
It's the producer that actually, you know, stresses out while we just sit here and just watch him kind of like, oh, my goodness.
Crash and burn.
Crash and burn. You know, I'm thinking, what is he doing? What is he doing? And
must be all that cartilage.
Oh, speaking of that, you know, they say that, you know, his mic is so good, you can hear him pop, snackle, and crunch. You know, it's amazing. It's like, oh, my goodness. You know, He used to be a Mako football player. And you can, I think there's a picture of him sitting on the bench on the torch. And
wearing some kind of do-rag. What was he wearing? What kind of hat? What was that?
A pine warmer.
It was a pine rag.
A pine warmer, something like that. He called it like, he's warming the pine or something.
Oh, my goodness.
He said something about bench, but he called it like pine or something.
But he had something on his head. I mean, was that to protect the hair? What was
all
that going
on? Okay, so he had a sneeze or something. He would carry his handkerchief on his head. And it was like some white handkerchief he had wrapped around the top of his head.
Is that after he took off his hat with the little...
Well, no, he would pull his mullet up and put it up under the handkerchief, and then he put his helmet on because he wanted it to be flat. You know what I'm saying? Flat. So he didn't have to iron it anymore. And so, you know what I'm talking about? And but anyway, like I was saying, that, you know, Snap, Crackle, and Pop over here, you know, the producer, that you can really hear. It was amazing. But he was a Mako. I mean, he watches football now, but he used to play it.
Oh,
he used to play it. But he's more aggressive now while he's watching it than when he's actually, He played
but
it.
He was playing.
Because it was pining, you know. What do we call that?
He was sitting. He was sitting.
I was riding the pine.
He was riding the pine. That's what it was. Riding the pine. Isn't that good, not a cool name for not getting to play? No. You know I'm joking. But we got the picture of him pining. And so then, so he's a Mako. And so I got thinking about it, you know, since Snap, Crackle, and Pop, you know, Makos are sharks. And it, that ties into the way my mind thinks is that. That shark cartilage, you know, it's supposed to be good for you, like good for to keep you from snap, crackle, and popping.
Really?
You
know, like,
yeah, shark cartilage. You eat it or something, or you put it in a pill or something. There's a name for it. I don't know what the name of it is, but I'm sure some MLM person
will let you know.
You take two of these in the morning and get two of your friends in it, and so then, he used to be a Mako. So you think that he wouldn't snap, crackle, and pop. You couldn't hear those things pop. And then
you would think that.
But then I realized what it was. I realized it's not his own cartilage. I was in the hospital with him years ago, and his Mako stuff ran out.
The warranty ran out.
He was on the back porch of his house, and there was a leaf on the back porch. And he went to kick the leaf off, and nothing happened. And So you can join in any time you want to.
That was after I'd already heard it, though.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so he goes to the doctor, and you know how reserved he is on the outside. He's not reserved on the inside. If you could put, like, a stethoscope on his head or something, you hear all kinds of stuff going on.
All kind of brain waves just firing
big
off.
And so then he goes to the doctor, and He has to get a new cartilage. He has to get new cartilage.
It was ACL, actually.
Is it?
Oh, see now.
And
see?
ABC,
see?
You know, now he's going to pipe up. Now he's going to say something.
No,
it's not his ACL. It came
it's
from
somebody else's.
Everybody out there in Texas, I just want to give a shout out to you.
That's where it came from.
He's walking around with some Texans.
Oh, praise the Lord for Texas. Now he can walk.
Yeah, he can walk, and so then the snap, crackle, and pop is actually a Texas snap, crackle, and pop.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
But you know how reserved he's just so reserved. You know what I'm saying? He's like just really reserved. If things, you know, what I'm saying he's not gonna just, you know, he's reserved. But when they put him and they gave him a shot of something, it was a moment, and it, you know, that was before iPhones had cameras and stuff.
Oh,
so we'd have some excellent footage because
is that when he was just doing the, you know.
Dude, he was the happiest man I ever seen. It was totally amazing. They're rolling him down. You know, I'm walking by his gurney when they were taking him down to get Texan cartilage because the Mako stuff's gone. And he's just so relaxed. He's just passing people in the hallway going, "Hey, what's up? How you doing?" I'm thinking, oh, this is camera time. This is video time. And he's walking. He's talking to the doctors, you know, and he's just being all friendly and stuff. And then, I'm just shocked. I'm just thinking, like, you know, I'm kind of stuck in this moment of going, I had to see if it was him or not because, you know, he had all of his, you know, things they put on you to be able to operate on you. And it was him. I saw his mustache out from under the thing. And, you know, and so he's passing by. We're about to go into some recovery room or something. And, you know, they put a Band-Aid on him. It was a small little thing. And I think they gave him an aspirin. No, they and he saw the screensaver. He passes this computer that this nurse has a screensaver, and he just starts saying, you know, of all the things you can say after your knee's been replaced from some Texans giving you their knee. He couldn't kick a leaf off the thing, and here he is high going through the emergency room operation room going, "I like that screensaver." I like that screensaver.
And we don't have this on video.
Oh man, I was like, it's just on the video in my mind. And so he's like, "How do I get that? How do I get that?" And I guess they're used to high patients, I guess, and they're not enjoying as much as I am, you know. And he has no problem that what they're saying about him or anything. It was so, I really enjoyed that. So I just had to tell you about it because there was no cameras in the operation room there. But we got to get you that screensaver.
Yeah,
that was, right there. Oh, yeah, we got to get him that. At least, you know, he can have that in the office. You know what? You need to get Eddie some of that cartilage, man. Anybody in Texas has some extra cartilage. Eddie could use some for that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, realize everything in Texas is bigger. So you got to be able to be ready for some big cartilage, you know, to show up. Might be able to just get one ACL and split it between two knees.
Probably could.
You know, everything's bigger in Texas. So speaking of that, you know, I was talking to Barbara, Pastor Barbara, Texas. And last night, you know, she's a teacher, and she has over 200 children that she has in a day's time.
Wow.
And she has to grade 200 children's work, and she is had parents, teachers, meetings. They all showed up. All 200 kids, children were there last night, and so she was up until 9 o'clock at the schools. Can you imagine meeting 20 children's students' parents? But she's got 200.
Wow,
I'm just in awe. I'm just in awe with the teachers, you know, all the teachers except for Chicago teachers. I'm just in awe.
Yeah.
And when you're getting paid $78,000 a year, you know, and you're working 5.5 hours a day and you want, you know, a day, that's okay. All right. You
found 9 months out of the year.
That was Southern. And so then they want 26% more pay raise. They, you know, it's like, oh my goodness. You have teachers like Barbara and other ones that are in this country that are making nowhere near that, and they have 200 people, 200 students in their classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Texas has an excellent education system. They say, you know, that it's really up there. And it's like, now here she is. I'm thinking, my goodness, I'm just in awe about her. And what she does and how she balances everything. And I'm proud of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of these teachers who love God and love their students and love their parents and just stay light in the midst of where the enemy's really encroached in darkness upon our schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to give a shout out to all of our teachers this morning. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you survived all your parent-teacher gatherings that are probably happening this week as you meet them. And that's pretty cool that you would make the chance to do that. And I want to encourage you, as you're a parent, don't just send your kids to a place that you don't even know anything about. Go meet the teachers. You know, go build a relationship. Partner with the teacher who's partner with you to be able to bring your children into a community that can function and be productive and, you know, do well in life.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I owe it to my teachers for everything that I don't know. I should have paid better attention. If I could have been as smart, you know, as John, you know, John is like,
that's Pat.
You know, I was so committed by the time of my second year in college, I was, I'm going to learn to read. I mean, I'm going to get this thing down, you know, and it's just amazing that, you know, I was a working person. I wanted to work. Nothing was fast enough. You know, so I wanted to work. And I think God put something on me at an early age. And my dad was a worker. My dad was in the, my grandfather, my dad's dad was, in the lumber business. And so he would go cut down pine trees that they made paper with and all that, you know, in the mill.
Wow.
And so he would take my uncles into the woods, and they had to take off all their clothes and work in their boxers because he didn't want to mess up their overalls and all their stuff. And so now you're in this rough, rugged, wooded area with bees and wasps stuff.
Yikes.
In your boxers.
Oh my gosh.
Cutting down trees, loading trucks. And I mean, that's tough, isn't it? That's your teen years. And today it's like, oh, I gotta take the trash out. Oh my goodness. It's like you're not in the woods and your boxers cutting trees. Come on. And so so it was minor compared when I was coming up by the time I was, I don't know, 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working and I wanted to work.
Right.
And I would catch the city bus, and I would ride the bus. I'd finish. I'd have like a, you go to school half a day, some sort of program they had.
Oh, okay.
And then I would catch a bus, and then I would ride the bus all the way to downtown, and then you got to switch another bus, a transfer ticket. You know, I'm only going 2 blocks, but it takes me 3 hours to get there on the bus. And it's nowhere near the buses that there is today, because I saw all the buses in Jersey. Those are luxury liners. And this is like plastic seated buses, you know.
Oh, wow.
And so then I would catch the bus and I would show up and I would work. At that time, I was working at an assisted living facility. And I loved it. It was like having a whole bunch of grandmothers and grandfathers. And I found out that ain't nobody innocent, including, hey, grandma, I know you're not innocent. I'm like, oh, my goodness, what are you doing? It's like, oh, my goodness, you know, we all need Jesus. We all need Jesus, you know.
At every age. Huh?
And I didn't know Jesus back then. I knew of him, but I didn't know him. But, Alzheimer's was not yet diagnosed. And just because something's not diagnosed does not mean it didn't exist.
Right.
You know, and so here we were dealing with, you know, some clients that had Alzheimer's that there was no name for it other than, don't do that. Go get her. She's gone again. And so at 14 years old, I'm running all over the place trying to find some clients because now they put people with Alzheimer's in a secure facility that it's still a normal place to live in. But right. They can't just bust out and just go somewhere because Alzheimer's, you know, you just forget, you know.
Yeah.
And unlike us.
Yeah, right.
What's going on? Oh, okay. Yeah. We have radio.
At what age does that start setting in?
What?
What? Yeah.
I call you know, Ken Summerall, Brother Ken, my spiritual father. We're joking around, you know, sometime back. And I said, I was talking to him. I said, hello. He goes, hello. I said, who is this? He goes, I don't know. Well, don't call me no more. He says, well, don't call me. And we were so funny. We were talking back and forth like we didn't. It was just funny, you know. The older you get, the more you realize you don't realize. Anyway, so I was working at a young age, and so I would go to work, and then Dad got sick because my father owned this facility, and he had gotten in a hiatal hernia situation and had to go to surgery in New Orleans, Ostener Clinic, and which we know now by the Hurricane Katrina, they had Ostener's Clinic on there. And so at 14 years old, I was just I had to run a 40-bed facility with employees shopping for groceries and meal planning and, you know,
wow,
and all that stuff. And I really liked it. It was good. You know, you wish you would have known then what you know now, because you really don't enjoy things as much as you really should have been able to enjoy them. And there was this one lady, I mean, she was, you know, everybody would eat, everybody would have a great time. It was good. It was just like family, like one big family. And a lot of their folks, you know, wouldn't come and visit them and things like that. But we were their friends and, you know, with all their grandson. And so this one lady, she would forget she ate. And so when guests would come out or somebody come and visit somebody, she'd walk up to them and she would chew snuff. So she had a little snuff kind of going down the, you know, because your face gets kind of liney and kind of wrinkly and, you know. And I was just kind of visual there. And so she had, like, her snuff was running, like, there was like a trench, you know. And so, and that alone was like, ooh. And then, and so she would come out and she would look at these people that were visiting. She goes, you got some coffee. You got some bread. You got some coffee. I'm like, oh my goodness. These people are going to think you're not getting fed. She said, but she was just stuck.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it didn't bother her. The whole thing is everybody thinks that it bothers the individual, but it doesn't bother the individual because they don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does when you're beginning, you know, you're beginning to, that's very frustrating. Believe me, I can tell you. But finally, when you give in to it, she would come and go, got some coffee? It was like, she would say it just like, you felt like you were back in the Great Depression and she wasn't being fat. It's like, got some coffee and some bread and some coffee. It was like the last bit of her air. And you're thinking like, oh my God. Goodness gracious, she just finished some bread pudding, a big pork chop and all that, and she's asking for that. But I really enjoyed that. Some wonderful people, a chance to, and I encourage you, if you're a young person, you know, you're around a lot of people right now that aren't working. They're just not working. And they don't think hard work is important, and they're looking for an entitlement mentality that everything should be given to them. Yep. And they look at their parents and they demand from their parents, you provide for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and they look at the government and saying, you provide for me, you know, and they look at pastors, and everybody in America is a pastor, although they're not, mm-hmm. they're leaders, mm-hmm. and they say, you provide for me. And God's going, no, you get your own bread. You get That's your right. own bread. You go to the mountaintop yourself. Paul said, if you don't work, you don't eat. If you That's don't right. work, you don't eat. And the way to take us captive is to forget about that how things happen, that it right. comes by hard work.
I can remember when I was, you know, younger, doing the same thing. You know, I used to have a paper route back then when teenagers and young kids were able to do paper routes. And I'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, deliver a newspaper, go to school and work after. But you're right, young generations, like, you got to work. It's not just going to be given to you. And you know what? I grew up knowing the value of a dollar.
Right. You know, isn't it amazing? It's like, I yeah. worked 3 hours for that thing.
That's right. I don't want that thing. Give me that other thing right there.
What really works, you know, you're asking your parents for $50 and you don't realize they busted their rumpus to be able to get that $50. But when you go bust your own rumpus and you cut 2 yards, you know, That's and right. you go buy you a lawnmower to do it, and then, you know, you take that money out of your pocket and you buy that stupid thing, you decide not to. It's like,
yeah, $50 pair of yeah, sneakers right, that right. you're gonna tear up the next day.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, you know, when Jared, you know, he always made his own money and but he went out there and he bought some big PS2 gamer thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that lasted about 1 week. And he's like, I wasted my money on this thing. Because he realized, you know, how much money it takes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you never get involved in the process of what it takes to make a seed grow from the soil, mm-hmm. what it makes, what causes a paycheck to enter your parents' hand or people's hand that works, you will never have a value of hard work. And God blesses the work of your hand, not the manipulation of your mouth, you know? And so if we want to be a blessed nation, it's hard working. And really, we just find joy in, you know, I believe it's Ecclesiastes when he talks about it, that it is our lot in our life. God is the gift of a man that from God is mm-hmm. to enjoy the work that God has given you mm-hmm. and not right. just be something you're trying to knock out and get. Just enjoy it, mm-hmm. you know, and find something that you enjoy. Find something that you enjoy, and there's, the greatest thing of all is do what you do naturally that you enjoy, and mm-hmm. then get paid for just enjoying life and work hard at, you know, what you have there.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's one of the secrets to success, you know. But either way, I mean, it required hard work, you know. When you know, I was 14, and it requires hard work now. But it's not something. If you look at work as something like the teachers in Chicago are looking at, they're tolerating it so they can get their retirement versus like, this is part of my existence. These students exactly. are, I want them to, my success is their success and all these different things, then it's totally different, you know? Sure. And
you're working with purpose. You're working with destiny. You're not just going to a job. I always like to say, like the old Dunkin' Donuts commercials. You ever see those old commercials? The guy gets up, says, time to make the donuts.
Yes.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like, no.
No, I think it's more like this. It's time to do the donuts. It wasn't a singing song.
You're right. I wasn't that excited. But you know what? It's a get-to. It's a get-to opportunity. And if you realize that, and as a believer, it's an opportunity to glorify God, you know, in all that we do. So it's influence. It's a way of worship. We could really recapture that word work again and make it more meaningful in our life. And so it's just good. It's just really, really, really good.
And, you know, before we break here, I just want to, you know, encourage yourself, encourage your family, encourage your friends, you know, and if they're like locked down into the mode of their entitlement where they think that things are given to them, you know, If he or she's your friend, you need to take them in a nice way by their shoulders and look them square in the eye and then kind of press backwards where their head kind of goes backwards, then jerk them back to you where their head snaps forward and then push backwards and their head snaps backwards and you kind of do it a couple times. And then you look at them and it's like, what are you doing? Exactly. This country was built on hard work. You know, God blesses the work of our hands. You know, the reason why you're living in a place, somebody built it. You know right. what I'm saying? The government didn't build your place. human beings built it. The mason and the carpenter and the electrician and the plumber and the earth moving person that's moving the dozers and the equipment and the people who came out and inspected it to make sure that it was right and all these different, and the people were involved in that. And if you've been living for a long period of time and you're not getting involved, this is what Paul said. Paul said to the church of Thessalonica, he said, listen, this is it. Mm-hmm. If you don't work, you don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't work, mm-hmm. you don't eat. And there's nothing that drives a man, the word of God says this, like hunger.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to get hungry. And guess what? Based on what we're seeing prophetically, that we're going to get hungry. We're going to get hungry. And some of us are going to live a little bit longer without getting a craving than others. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like sausage biscuits and... And, you know, I'll live a little bit longer, and Pat will just faint the first day. He'll just faint. He has, like, no body. He has no body fat, so he'll just fall.
All right.
Storage, no nothing.
Yeah, like a little wind will blow him over, right? Like, we'll be strong for a month. Be strong for a month. But I'm focused again because, you know, I found the things I lost, you know, when the doctor told me. What? I thought he said, you sure did. Stripes should go the other way. You know, they don't cover things up that way. And so but I'm back on, isn't that funny when you feel like you're actually losing weight and you say, okay, I'm going to go weight. It's the opposite. But when you feel like you're actually have gained weight and you weigh, it's like, I lost weight.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is, what's that?
I thought that was just me.
No, it's the devil. And then, but it's amazing too, is how it can affect your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what some people say, I will not go through that emotional roller coaster again. So I will never weigh again. It's like, that's working. I tried that. Somebody told me, you're just going to quit weighing. You know what I'm like?
Right.
And I couldn't find my scale anymore. You see it down there? I had to get mirrors and stuff and kind of reflect up under my feet. It was like, okay, there it is down there. And I had to weigh both feet and kind of average it out and come with until I got down to be able to see my scale again. Not weighing's not a good idea. That's sort of like not reading the Bible to make sure you won't feel bad anymore about your sin. I mean, you're going to have to, you know, begin to weigh and check yourself, you know, see if you're in the faith and check yourself, see if you're in the right body mass indicator. and tell you, it's like getting a raise. You get to keep your clothes. I mean, think about it. Pat's had the same Saints shirt for 75 years. You know what I'm saying? If I would have done, I could have all these clothes I could have. But I do want to say, you know, I've been very generous because I donated a lot of clothes to a lot of people. They're a lot smaller than me. We'll be right back in a moment. You know, I just want to say this before we go in this first hour. You know, I think about that, Promise Keepers, when Coach mm-hmm. McCartney, you know, began, you know, God touched his heart and he began to share with his friend about, you know, we just got to get, you know, men together and we got to get right. people together. And two men, one man, then two men, then 40 men, as they began to do this and build small groups of men around America, mm-hmm. then eventually that filled stadiums. But the stadiums weren't filled because Coach McCartney had an idea. Mm-hmm. It was because God wanted to begin to get men in small groups and begin to show them himself. And so that happened. Mm-hmm. But the problem is when it came out of the stadiums, it just died out.
That's right.
You know, and what God birthed in us at that particular point was, you know, that it was time. What is the next step after the stadiums? And if you mm-hmm. go look at our history, mm-hmm. our history started with next step. And it was right. it wasn't just an idea. It was like, what's the next step after the stadium? Because these men were alive, you know, and they went back to sleep and they got back mm-hmm. seduced again. They went back to where they were when they were dead. They came out. They came alive in the stadiums and the small groups, and they went back in the dust. So what was the problem? And then we went through a process of repentance where we went into the wilderness to repent for the turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers, and God moved mightily. We finished that aspect of it. And then we went with the traditional model of what we've seen happen, and all we realized that is what's producing the death. And we had to stop that. Then God called us out to begin to birth, you know, what we're doing today, understanding that God wants his church back. And I think about this. I think about, you know, that, Reverend Billy Graham worked really hard. I mean, they would start probably a year, 9 months in advance to focus mm-hmm. and fill one particular stadium. And right. he would go in there, the stadium, and everybody worked so hard to bring whoever to come into that stadium and fill those seats to be able to preach the gospel to them once.
Mm.
Once. Wow. And then when he would preach once, think about it. When he preached once, that all of a sudden, people would find God. People would get saved. And they, and he transformed a lot of our nation and our presidents and all the things because he just preached the gospel one stadium at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about this. You think about how very specifically that here we are today.
Right.
And what we're finding out that God's called us to stadiums. We've seen the stadiums filled with people. We've seen them filled with people all across the nation. We've seen them. We've seen them crying out to God, and we've seen this taking place. But what's going to happen first, like the groundwork happened to Reverend Billy Graham when he began to work and do what was going on. He would begin to do the work, and then the stadium would be filled to preach the gospel once. But what we found out is this, in VFN radio, based on what we're understanding at this present point, that when we share with over the 900 million people that are available right now and they're connected in the social media atmosphere, there's 1/6 of the world's population, that if we share with them VFN TV and the VFN radio program, that out of every dollar that we use to share it with them, one of them comes and sits on our virtual stadium. And they don't come, and they like us on Facebook, mm-hmm. or they connect to us and download our app, but they like us. And so $1 produces someone sitting in that seat based on what we presently see. Where, think about it. So, and with Reverend Billy Graham, who did an awesome thing for the Lord, you know, he preached once to him. But with VFN TV and the data radio program, when you sit in our virtual stadium, when you sit and listen and you have your VFN TV app, you have your VFN radio, you have Facebook, you have the VFN Torch. I mean, it's just, you're just every day the gospel is coming to everybody who sits in our stadium. When you help fill that stadium, that virtual stadium, for $1 per person, it looks like, think about it. I mean, if you just write $10 a month, you can fill 10 more seats in this virtual stadium. The probability is just huge. I mean, think about it. Even $100 a month, 100 new seats get filled a month. You have this 1,200 seats that you filled at the end of that month yourself, all by yourself, or maybe even a dollar. We can begin to transform instantly. Think about it. I'm looking right now at a particular article on a broadcast that we had over 73,000 people. Think about that. That's a stadium of 73,000 people that heard the prophetic word over what's taking place on one particular segment. Be a part of it. Let's turn the heart of this nation, and we can turn the heart of this nation by filling this virtual stadium. And if we'll fill this virtual stadium, this is what I believe. We'll fill stadiums all around this nation, but they first have to be filled, and the gospel has to be sown into their hearts now. How can you do that? Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. Click on fill the stadium now, and maybe it's $1 a month, maybe it's $2 a month, maybe it's $100 a month. By doing that, you fill the virtual stadium, and we can preach the gospel every single day to them, where Reverend Billy Graham only preached it once, and look at the return. We can turn the heart of this nation. Do it now. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving.
You know, John, the content and the topics and subjects that we've been hearing on the VFN TV Daily Live radio program has been encouraging, is it not?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. I just want to encourage you, the listeners that have been listening, you know, if you've missed anything, I want to encourage you to go on VFNTV.com, and you'll see a torch on the right-hand side. Click on that link, and you'll be able to see all of the highlights. You'll be able to scroll back. You know, you might not have even known about the Daily VFN radio program until like a week ago. But we have been posting all of the highlights since beforehand, and you can catch all of the highlights since before you've even been listening. Go to VFNTV, V for Vine, VFNTV.com, and then click on the torch on the right-hand side.
Welcome back to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me to encourage you this morning is Pat Hamilton and John Ramos. My goodness, I understand, John, about the blind sheik.
Yes.
Talk to us about what's I mean.
It's huge.
Didn't he meet with him in the White House? Didn't our president have a meeting with him early on? Yeah, they actually met. They met, well, not him. They met, it could be him. But definitely met on behalf of him, you know, in the beginning. Remember they were talking about, you know, he's meeting with terrorists in the White House. He's the mastermind of
the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, which is huge. He's been, you know, in prison here in the United States, and the State Department is actually considering talks to transfer the blind sheik back to Egypt. And this is huge because, you know, this is the mastermind. This is the mastermind of the 1993 bombings of the World Trade Center, which was, you know, horrible. I mean, my dad actually, I had a relative. My dad wasn't there at the time, but I did have a relative that was there. And it's just like, this is nuts. And that what they're saying is that more than likely it's going to be after the election, and that there's no, correlation between what is happening in Egypt right now.
That's like telling the Jews in Germany there's no correlation between the fact that you're losing your home, we're taking it over, and the train that you're going to be on, or the ghetto that you're in, that you'll soon be in a gas shower and your bodies will be in ovens, and we'll be pushing your bodies into mass graves. No, this is no correlation. We underestimate, the church has so underestimated evil.
Yeah.
Underestimated so much so that they look to bargain with evil. Say, I have Satan totally. I just, you know, I just do a little bit of darkness.
Mm.
And that,
and what time is ticking?
It's so ticking. You know, it brings to a point that, and somebody says, you know, I truly believe, and you need to watch on VFN TV. You need, you know, we talk about the now topics and what's going on. We have a great time and we want to encourage you and give you the words of wisdom and God's news behind the news. But you need precept upon precept as well. You need to know prophetically, specifically what God is, you know, his word being taught. And you can get that on VFN TV. But Josiah is the message for American Christians, is Josiah. And, you know, you hear quite often people talk about him historically, but the reality is in America, you know, we are Josiah.
Mm-hmm.
We are Josiah. And understanding that go to VFN TV and watch it. If you haven't seen that, you need to go see that. You need to share it with all your friends. This movie that's out, it's called Last Ounce of Courage, and it comes from a quote. From 1964 quote from President Ronald Reagan, I guess then, you know, he was speaking on behalf of GE, I think, and he was going to run for governor later on. But I loved what he said. I've been trying to find the quote, and if you have the quote, you can send it to us, you know, go to VFNTV.com and send it to us.
Mm-hmm.
But the, boils down to this. That even if it is over, let it be said of us in the history books that we fought for what was right. Let our children look back and...
Wow, that's huge.
And fought for what is right. And...
I mean, if you don't stand for something, you're going to fall to anything, and it's time. All of this is happening... And they're considering releasing the blind sheik. All the while, Israel, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, has taken to the airwaves to talk to the American people to try to get encouragement to get the President of the United States to put a red line against Iran. And finally, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, finally says, listen, we cannot outsource the defense of Israel to another country. We cannot depend on another country to protect it. When you're facing, he's charged with the responsibility of protecting
similar
the nation.
Similar to what the church is actually doing to the government in America. The church is
there
choosing to outsource everything that's going on. Yeah, and that's well, that's in the last ounce of strength. I had to catch my breath there. It's something choking, I guess, or coughing. But the last ounce of it's called The Last Ounce of Courage.
Courage.
You got to see it as long as it lasts. But it's something that today's culture if somebody says, you mean there's a probability I might lose? I mean, nobody wants to vote for a candidate that they feel like, for example, might lose an election, even though the one they're voting for is for Jesus. They wouldn't vote for Jesus if they thought he was going to be nailed to a cross. That's about the mentality. Right. When you know that Jesus is right, there's many people in the church that would say, but isn't Jesus going to be nailed to a cross? Isn't he going to lose the election?
Right.
And they weren't supporting any particular candidate. And they were just saying, like, really? Are you serious? By the way, he doesn't lose. It just looks like it. He wins. He wins. And he will be the leader of all. And so, you know, in that, I love the message of this movie, and it's a quote saying, listen, let it be said of us, you know, Ronald Reagan said, let it be said of us, because they're facing the same times we're facing now, that in the history books, that we did not sit back and do nothing, that we even fought with our last ounce of courage for what was right. Even though if we lose it, let it be said of us that we fought. And that's, you know, that's what launched VFN-TV and the Daily Radio program, is that on behalf of the kingdom of God and the church, we're fighting for you, the church. That's our same sentiment that we have in our hearts towards what we're doing, because we believe that if God's people, if we humble ourselves, truly do it, and turn back to God's way of doing things and just let go, despite what the world does. It doesn't matter what they do.
Wow.
That in that, that you, there's hope. And despite, understand this too, that despite what happens to any nation, earthly nation, kingdoms rise, kingdoms fall, God's kingdom is forever, and you don't want to be on the wrong side of God's kingdom.
Right.
And but it's worth, the church is worth fighting for. Now I'm not talking about what the church has turned, identifies itself with in America. I'm talking about the woman, I'm talking about the 55-year-old woman who is a single widow who is desperately needing a hug and loves Jesus, and she reads her Bible, and they're just caught up in their programs, they don't even know she exists. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm talking about her. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the teenage boy that's going through all this dilemma in his life. And everybody's so caught up in their work in the church organization that all he needs, because he doesn't have a father, is somebody to put their arm around him and begin to speak into his life. And he would listen. At least it would be something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm talking about people. I'm talking about the church. The people you're worth fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
No brick, no mortar, no house, no shopping center, you know, no organizations worth fighting for, but you as a human being, God loves you and God has a plan for your life and you're worth fighting for.
That's right.
And so that's what we're doing. And I saw this movie, I'm thinking like, oh my goodness, because our soldiers, this man has a son that he sends to war and his son doesn't come back. And a lot of our soldiers, actually 1.3 million people have died for our freedom that we have in America. And what are we doing with that freedom that they died to give us? Are we just sitting back and doing nothing? Because in America, we have the freedom to express ourselves. You know, we're not, it's not a theocracy like Iran's a theocracy, and they're, you know, they want to run it the way they want to run it through the Ayatollah. But America's not like that. America says, hey, as long as your freedom doesn't break my leg or rob from me, I mean, if you don't want to worship God, you don't have to worship God. If you want to call that, you know, whatever thing God, you can call it God and worship it.
Right.
You know, but I can worship God too, and I can worship Jesus Christ as God.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do whatever how I want to do it, and the government shall make no laws concerning that whole thing. And it's like, that's a freedom that they died. 1.3 million men and women died to give us that right, that freedom to be able to do that and take down manger scenes. You have a freedom to be able to put a manger scene up and to celebrate Jesus' birthday. It's a national holiday. 150 years ago, it was put down as a federal national holiday for to celebrate Christmas or a non-religious holiday for you. But either way, it's both. So it's written in the laws that we can celebrate Christmas. And it's like, we got to stand up. I mean, even if the last thing we do before a people goes into captivity, if that is the destiny, we don't want to not be standing up for Jesus and standing up for what's right. At the same time, we want to be standing up for him in our heart.
Right.
That's right.
You know, and listen to this. Listen to this trailer right here. You need to go see it before it's not in the theaters anymore. But we'll make this available on the Torch for you today. Listen up.
You are breaking the law.
Show me the law.
Well, then you are violating the Constitution.
That is a lie, and you know it.
Hi, I'm Chuck Norris. I'm here with my best friend, Marshall Teague, promoting his movie, Last Ounce of Courage. This is a film that everybody needs to see.
He gave his life for his country. What did my dad die for, Bob?
That's what happens in war.
No, I mean, why'd he die? He gave his life for his country. So, what are we doing? What are you doing?
I lost a brother in Vietnam. So, you know, and I could feel the pain that Marshall was going through in this film.
I had become so bitter and blind to what was going on around me, I asked God to forgive me. I kept thinking about my son.
From the first second that I read the script, I mean, I knew. You know, I knew right then it was something special. It wasn't like anything I had read before. It wasn't just a script. It had a script with a meaning in it. Not only a meaning, but something that I personally believe in.
What did you say to him?
I told him to come home. And I told him to defend our freedoms with his last ounce of courage.
Action. Bob Revere is a man and a soldier that believes in his country deeply, but due to a traumatic experience in his life, took a step back inside himself.
I've been sitting around here watching it disappear just like everybody else. I mean, what makes me any different than the next guy that just sits around and does nothing?
His grandson basically lit a fire under him to bring back the patriot that he always was.
Our freedoms are being taken away from us one by one. Well, that's how we're taking them back, one at a time.
Okay, all extras back to first positions, please.
This is the only movie in my life that I've ever promoted that I'm not in. This film does mean a lot to me of how incredible it is.
Mayor Revere has taken the law into his own hands to promote his own religion.
I take offense to your politically motivated actions, and I'm here to protect my rights as an American citizen.
The themes of the film themselves are pretty straightforward. I mean, it is freedom. When you think of freedoms, it is all our freedoms that we as a nation enjoy every single day. I mean, we enjoy the freedom of speech, for instance, the freedom of religion.
There's a scene where Marshall's up on top of a building giving a talk. It was so riveting. And most of it was ad-libbing. He ad-libbed a lot of the speech, and which he told me later, and I thought, my gosh.
My fight is about freedom and taking back what has been stolen from us. We are losing freedoms one by one that our forefathers, our brothers in arms, and my son died for. It is time we stood up for what they died for what we believe in. We can't be silent anymore. The silence has to stop, and it has to stop today. We fight for freedom.
I just want to encourage everyone that's listening to me right now to go see this movie, because you will not be disappointed.
This is freedom. This is freedom. This is freedom. This is freedom.
Everybody ask a question of themselves, what can I do instead of just sit here? Then the movie's accomplished what it went out to come accomplish.
This is freedom.
This movie was awesome. This movie, you've got to see it. It just puts everything into perspective. It puts everything into perspective, and it is, you know, as I was talking about earlier when they were... I had the opportunity and the privilege to be there with Kevin's father's funeral, who was a prisoner of war in Korea, and how they honored him. You know, we lost four soldiers in Afghanistan Sunday. 51 mm-hmm. has been shot by people we're trying to help. We just lost our ambassador and two Marines and another, a civilian in Libya with the embassy there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what are we dying for? And it's for freedom's sake. It's for the Constitution. The very thing that we're seeing people apologize for mm-hmm. is like, that's the very thing that we're dying for. Don't cause their death to be in vain. Understand that these men and women believed in the United States of America and the Constitution, and many of them believed in God and country, and they went on behalf to lay down their life. And this movie puts things such perspective. Oh, my goodness. I can't tell you. I'm just not going to tell you all the details. You got to see it.
Don't.
I ain't going to tell you the details of it, but it's just there was not a dry eye in the place, and everybody, you know, realized, oh, my goodness.
Mm.
You know, and it's like, and you know, that's our cry. It's like, why is the church so silent? Mm. Why are you so quiet? Let me tell you, I know why you're quiet. You're quiet because your hope is in a man. Mm. Your hope is in a candidate. You think if you get the right candidate in, if you get the right, you know, political party in, that there's salvation for a country that God gave us.
Mm.
And the truth is, there's no salvation in a man, any other man than Jesus Christ.
That's right.
That's who is the God or was the God of America, and once again can be the God of America.
Mm-hmm.
Even though our president said we're no longer a Christ-following nation, we're no longer a Christian nation,
right.
You know, it's not like he's lying about it. It's the very fact that the church quit following Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But if we'll start following Christ, if we start following Christ again and being his disciple, Jesus said, those who follow my teachings are really my disciples, then there's a chance. There's a chance that God would hear from heaven and heal our land. I mean, there were strategic moments for Nineveh when mm-hmm. Jonah's talking to them. I mean, God gave him, I think, an extra day or two because he needed mm-hmm. time to get through this large city. But there was a strategy because it was time. The cup was full for Nineveh. Mm-hmm. The cup was full, and it was time for the city to go through turmoil. And but God loved the city. He loved the people in the city. So reluctantly, Jonah goes after being, you know, a great time of running away from God and hiding in, you know, on a ship and being in the belly of the well. And finally, he reluctantly, because he had an attitude towards the Ninevites.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But God didn't have an attitude. Let me tell you something. God says God's attitude towards you. He loves you.
Mm-hmm.
But understand that when the cup is full for a nation, that it will be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And that the only way to turn that is for us to turn back to him. And it's a jealous love. You can die in a jealous love because a brokenhearted lover who loves you, and God deeply loves you, with all this offense and sin rising before him again and more and more and more and more and more, at some point, he's going to rock this earth to demonstrate his love for us. And in that shaking, quaking, and rocking, and splitting, and economies moving, and all this kind of stuff, that many will lose their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's over for you at that point.
That's, I mean, right.
If you didn't know him, you're not going to, like, get out of hell free card. I mean, it's not going to mm-hmm. happen.
That's right.
And you need to know now, because it looks like it's inevitable, because Joseph told Pharaoh that because God gave you the dream twice, you know, it's definitely going to happen. Well, God has been saying hundreds of times
mm-hmm.
that this is coming. And one thing I want to talk about, and we've talked about this, is God's news behind the news perspective about Guy Fawkes, a mask, is this is what the Lord's shown us. Because you're seeing, like, you're seeing pulses, like, where there's not a time of seeing the mask, and then you're seeing a time to see in the mask. Okay, let's don't talk about the mask. What does it represent? We're seeing uprisings of rebellion against government. And then you're seeing it kind of die down a little bit. And then you're seeing it rise up again. And then you're seeing it die down again. Well, God already told us about this. He said mm-hmm. this is exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be one time when they take on the spirit of rebellion and there's no turning back. And it's a short period of time. Obviously, it's a very mm-hmm. short period of time away. And I would say it'd probably be on this side of the election. That's what I would think mm-hmm. of coming up with whoever America's going to choose for their leader. I don't think we're going to get that far before this is going to happen, because some of the world strategists who are not concerned about the 5.2% of the population, which is America's size of the population of the world, they're looking more at world control and world dominance, that the way they flip nations, they do it right before elections. They crash an economy. They make it put doubt in an election. They do all these different little, you know, checkpoints that you can go back and study how they did it. George Soros is one of those people out there doing that. And I believe that I believe that several people that were once in our leadership of our country is part of it as well. I believe that the green laws and the economy's global warming and all that, the purpose of that is to create a infrastructure, an international infrastructure that eventually allows the world to be controlled. But it's something, you know, minute. It seems like, oh, it's a good thing, you know, it's a good thing. And that's how they do. Yeah. They do that today when they talk about, you know, how to tax Americans. There was a law was passed, and I forget about the law. It was, I can't tell you the details. Can you tell about the details? It was like 1904 or something or something. They passed this law, maybe in the 1800s, and they go back and use that one law, that one access, that one case law to be able now to use. They just used it recently to be able to tax everybody for health care. And they have a right to for commerce. It's a commerce law,
right?
And with that, it just been used for everything. You know,
they try to bring it in so smoothly, and you don't even take notice. But that's what this whole green initiative is all about.
Yeah,
it's about every which way to add another tax to you.
Yeah, and so if they can begin to create something that the United Nations has to be over. That they'll regulate it, then you're looking down the road, they're going to say, well, you know, gun control, you know, this is the stuff about, you know, the Islamic radical terrorists, you know, we need to be able to, the reason their issue is guns, and so they begin to control everybody's guns because one bad guy has a gun. That's how they're trying to do it in America now. So then it's just progression. And the more you let fear run your life, the more freedoms you're going to give up till eventually you have no freedoms at all. And so you have to be willing to die for what you believe in. You have to be willing to die for what you believe in. And there's nothing more exciting to be around somebody who is willing to give their life for the cause that they believe in. I mean, it's amazing. Wow. I mean, those are people that, and the thing is that Jesus was willing to give his life for you.
Wow.
The disciples were willing to lay down their life for the cause. Many men and women were willing to lay down their life so the church can move on and advance and the kingdom could expand. Americans laid in their life so we could have the freedom of the Constitution.
Right.
Wow. And the question we have to ask ourselves is what are we going to do? What are we going to do as American citizens? Are we going to continue to fight for freedom? Are we going to continue to honor the Constitution? Are we going to continue to honor those who have gone before us? Or did they all die in vain? And you look at the sacrifice that built this country, and you look at what happened, it's like, and we have to remember. We have to remember.
Right. And then the thing is that first read it, read the Constitution before you say, yeah, that's right, I'll die for it. And read the Ten Commandments before you demand them to be on somebody's wall. And understand this, that you have to understand, no matter what, you got to answer this question, is Jesus worth laying your life down for? Is America worth laying your life down for? And if you can't answer those two questions, yes, I mean, you're not going to fight. I mean, you're not going to stand up for what's right. But if you look and see what's right, and if you think America, if, you know, standing up for Jesus is right, and we're supposed to do that as believers, and in second place, standing up for your country is right, then you think, you know what? It's worth the next generation to have the freedom to worship God for me to be able to do that. I'm going to stand up and just say, I'm going to use, and that means this, I'm just going to use my freedom to worship God openly. I'm not going to be muzzled down. I'm not going to be restrained, you know, up until they take my freedom away, and may it never happen, but I'm going to use my freedom for Jesus. You know, so let the history books be said of us, and let it be said, hopefully, of you as you're listening, that you did not waste and squander the First Amendment. That you used it to its last moment. Well, praise God. Here we are coming to the end of the first hour. My goodness. If you missed the extra hour coming up in just a moment, don't forget you can listen on your application, on your phones and your iPads, or go to vfntv.com. For those that are staying with us, we'll see you on the other side as we pick up in a few moments in the extra hour.